We'll do it again, over.
It's lights out and away we go. What a match day this was.
Laying down one night, who'd probably tell mama? Who'd probably tell mama? Look at that boy Boogie. Come on. I felt so good.
Podcasting from Studio 2520, somewhere near Akron, Ohio, and live via the paid subscription of Zencaster, the campus of Otterbein University in Westerville, Ohio. This is Tackling the Chicane.
Bang, 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 bang. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. I love the way you walk. And I love the way you talk. When you walk that walk. And you talk that
I was introduced to this particular song via the Blues Brothers. Not sure if it made the soundtrack, but it was in the movie for a brief moment. This, however, is a cover by, of all bands, Big Head Todd and the Monsters, which if you haven't checked them out, you should. John Lee Hooker recorded this song on October 26, 1961. Music critic Charles Shar Murray calls it the greatest pop song he ever wrote, which may be the greatest pop song that John Lee Hooker ever wrote. Not sure about that, but there you go. if you haven't checked out John Lee Hooker as a musician, worth a shot.
Yeah. Fundamental to that that blues scene of the time for sure.
And I was kind of shocked. I stumbled upon the Big Head Todd and the Monsters cut a few years ago, but true to form.
Yeah.
a pretty good cover. So.
Yeah. Always a great one. Good part of that movie too. The Blues Brothers.
Yeah.
Ray's music exchange.
Yeah. Right before they go in, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know. I need to watch it. Been a while.
Yeah, I actually watched that with my friends maybe a month or two ago, maybe. Yeah, definitely a good one. Yeah. All right, so it has been 2 weeks since the last time we recorded. I had the privilege of going to Charlotte, North Carolina for track and field, but unfortunately had to get in the way of our usual recording time from last week. So that is why there was a gap in the recording. And since then, obviously, you know, the world of sports hasn't stopped. And the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix has occurred in the world of Formula One. The soccer world has continued. We're going to touch on what I thought was a rather compelling FA Cup fixture between Man United and Liverpool, two great rivals there, and pretty much whatever else comes to mind as we go on through the show. We will look ahead to Australia and the third race of the 2024 F1 calendar as well. But why don't we just get it started with some thoughts from Saudi Arabia? Of course, our usual king of Formula One took the checkered flag in Max Verstappen, now 9 straight victories for those keeping score at home. But there were definitely some other storylines here, so I'm kind of wondering if you cast your mind back. What stood out?
Well, first of all, RB with the gearbox failure prior to the start of the race, limped around for a lap, and then that was the end of the day for Pierre Gasly. So, if this kid doesn't make a move after this year, I'll be shocked. I honestly think that he's not really real super thrilled with the performance of AlphaTauri and now Red Bull. I think he's got some potential if he just gets into a little bit more competitive machine potentially. So not sure what that's mm-hmm. going to be. The second half of this campaign is going to be quite interesting because I think that's when the proverbial shit will hit the fan.
Yeah, it does feel
F1 has a propensity to make you hang on till the last possible second, but there's going to be a lot of talk going on here. And I don't want to shuffle ahead too far as we're just getting into the season, but I expect the second half of the year to be pretty interesting.
Yeah, I do think that's a good point.
Yeah, no. And then Stroll into the wall, lap 6. I had a note here. This is kind of a while back, but the engineer asked him if he could drive the car back, and he was like, he was all pissed. And I know they don't always see because they're in a different spot. But yeah, the car was pretty much fucking toast. And the guy's like, can you drive it back? I don't know. It's just funny. And he's like,
That was one of the exasperation than that.
So,
yeah, that was one of the our first sort of, I guess, funny moments of the season, just because Stroll had sort of completely just overcooked a corner, just flew himself into the wall and smashed up the front. And, you know, like you said, we have the privilege of seeing everything that happens. And it's funny. Just you see the destroyed car and then can you drive it back? No, that's not going to work. So a little bit of maybe it's hard with Stroll because there's, you know, his seat is safe, but I still wonder if he feels the pressure of trying to live up to his teammate Alonso.
100%. 100% he does. And the safety of that seat is not guaranteed. I don't know. He's shown moments of improvement, I guess, over the last couple of years. I guess it all depends on what happens with Alonso at the end of this year. I'm not so sure he's keen on sitting in that Aston Martin for another season.
Yeah, well, the big rumor mill acquisition for Aston Martin seems to be Carlos Sainz, which is interesting, obviously, because I think Sainz is a guy who's good enough for any team on the grid. You would think Alonso is probably not coming back, but who knows with him. But yeah, Aston Martin is definitely, and a lot of teams are like this, but Aston Martin especially are a team with quite a few question marks as we go along. One other thing, just before we get into maybe some of the more nuts and bolts of this one, obviously talking about Sainz, he was not able to go in this race due to a emergency appendicitis surgery.
Right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, and Ollie Bearman steps into the ride, 18-year-old Brit. He is actually, if I'm not mistaken, has pretty close ties with the Haas team since they're Ferrari adjacent. And I think it's pretty fair to say he impressed in this one.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it was the story of the weekend leading up to the race and qualifying and through the race. I guess, impressed with him as a driver, but he's also in a very good machine as well. You know, ties to Haas, yes. Put him in a Haas, would he have been able to accomplish what he did in a Ferrari this particular campaign? I doubt it.
Yeah.
But you don't know. It was a great story, and I mean, I'm super happy for him. He could have tanked it, basically. I don't think most people realize that the jump from F2 to F1 is it's a pretty big leap. So
yeah,
he must have had a lot of sim time, because he acted like he's been in the car all year, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I was more than impressed with his performance. More than impressed there. You know, there were, you know, you speak about Haas, and would he have been able to do the same thing in the Haas machine? Probably not. And, you know, I can't figure out just yet where this Haas is this season, because obviously qualifying still seems to be going pretty well. And then in this race, they actually end up in the points with Nico Hülkenberg. Yeah.
They're both. And then Magnussen got boned on a fucked up penalty.
Oh yeah. We can get into that.
We talk about that later, but he ends up finishing 15th because of that. And I guess my next note after the Stroll incident on lap 6 was, you know, Norris got investigated for a jump start.
Yeah.
And the commentators seem to be 100% sure that he did just that, and then there was no penalty issued.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't recall, but I don't remember seeing a ton of replays of this, of his box on the start, probably by design. I still think ultimately F1 has their finger on the broadcast as far as what gets shown and what doesn't get shown.
Yeah.
Most of the commentators on the F1 feed were sure that he should have gotten a penalty for that, and he did not. So that was a little bit exasperating, considering then that, you know, Haas gets a 10-second penalty for contact with Alexander Albon.
Yeah.
And then another second 10-second penalty for exceeding track limits. Both of which were kind of contested by the commentators as being, you know, a little bit ticky-tack. So
yeah, this was a fair to say strange performance from race control and the stewards. First off, let's go back to the Lando Norris thing. He 1,000% jumped the start. And we saw, if I remember, maybe 2 replays of this. He jumped the start, and I have no idea how he doesn't get a penalty there. And then you go and look at all of these penalties that are given to Magnussen. The first one with Albon, okay, we've seen that before. We know he's a bit of a bulldog. He's racy. He's going to make himself wide. He's going to squeeze you into corners. And it was that. And I'm fine with that first penalty, although 10 seconds. But I don't know what. The track limits, was it track limits where he gets another penalty, and then there's yet another one slapped onto him?
I have it written down as leaving track. So I don't know if that was track limits or if he sailed into one of those giant painted offshoot things or something. Regardless, I mean, if you're not going to give Norris a penalty for what was clearly a jump start, don't pile penalties on a fucking team that's just trying to survive.
Yeah.
I know some people, well, the race is a race, and if you, everybody should be penalized equally. But I just when you scrutinize, I didn't think the Albon contact deserved the penalty. How much contact have we seen in this series where there's no penalty issued?
Yeah.
Quite a bit.
I think the problem with me that I have with these penalties is, like, I don't know what constitutes a penalty and what doesn't, because it never feels like it's the same thing. It never feels. Yeah. How much contact can you get away with before it's a penalty? Sometimes it's none. Other times you can squeeze someone into a corner or take a fucking side pod off and nothing happens. So I don't know.
I would say to summarize this race, it was good to watch.
I thought it was great.
We had a second storyline with Bierman. We had some stuff getting mixed, you know, some strategy tire wise mixed in there, and it was great. It was a good race, considering, you know. Hopefully, this is kind of the cadence that a lot of these races are going to take. And if we just erase ourselves from the guy who's 20 seconds ahead of everybody, there's still some good stuff to watch. And I'm glad the F1 at least doesn't follow the lead car around.
That's, you know, what
once he gets out, then they're going back through the pack and making it interesting to watch.
And I think they did well with that, because the last 15 or so laps, we got that good battle between Magnussen, Ocon, Tsunoda, Albon, who are all kind of trading places.
You've got to dig up some jewels in these in these races to watch. So if they continue to do that, it's going to help tremendously.
Yeah, and
plus I'm still learning the importance of, honestly, just getting a fucking point in this series.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like any other series, whereas 10th is, you know, something to hang your head about. In this series, if you finish 10th, these guys they're not dancing around, but they're pretty goddamn close.
Yeah.
You know, which is interesting. It was hard to watch at first, but now when somebody gets P4 or P5, you get pretty pumped about it.
Mm-hmm. So. And that's the thing with the current era we're in with the Red Bull dominance. Anything, these teams are fighting for anything they can get. You know, so, you know, Leclerc is finishing third in this one, and he's happy with his podium and the performance of the car. Obviously, we know Haas celebrated the point like they won the championship, which is good. You know, it's good to see that not only are they in the points, but, you know, that they can find the joy in that. And as a side note, big ups to K-Mag for defending that position quite well for his teammate. I just think in general, when you look at the results outside of the 1-2, there is a lot of interest to be had, and I'm starting to really love the battle we're seeing with McLaren and Mercedes. Norris and Hamilton were duking it out for most of this race, and Piastri as well. So I think there's quite a bit of interest between a lot of the teams in terms of the competitiveness, which is pretty refreshing to see.
Yeah, I just wanted to go back and look at real quick. If I can get there. A little better. I guess what I'm trying to say is, you know, a point at a time in the constructors' standings could be the difference between last place and a respectable, say, seventh
mm-hmm.
constructors.
Yeah.
And I was trying to see what the spread was last year, but I can't find it, or I can't get back to it fast enough. Doesn't matter. I'll look it up for next time.
Yeah. I mean,
I guess what we're trying to say is, you know, those 1 and 2 and 3 point finishes for constructors is a pretty big deal.
Yeah, most definitely. And look at the grid and you'll see it's sort of the 5 top teams and then the 5 bottom. So anytime the bottom teams can get into the points, it's a huge deal. And I had a little extra free time after this race, I remember, and I watched some of the driver interviews that they had. And one of them was with K-Mag, and he was just talking, you know, about the importance of a team like Haas being able to break into that top 10 and disrupt the top 5 teams who are very clearly a lot better at the moment. And, you know, for a team like Haas to be in the points at this point in the season is really a big deal. So if, you know, if you're looking for storylines, that's another one. See what these bottom 5 teams can do or how they're approaching the race.
Well, and I also learned that being up there in 10th and 11th place is different than being a minute and a half behind in 20th.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you are affecting a lot of stuff in that position, whether
yeah.
people want to admit it or not. And if you can get yourself dicey enough to be in 6th, 7th, or 8th, now you're really in the mix. You know, it's not just the podiums.
Mm-hmm.
It's the guys that are fighting for those mid-pack positions. And if you can be a thorn in somebody's side and just block, or, you know, it's hard to pass in this series. You can be a real ass if you want to be.
So, oh, we saw with K-Mac, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he's a defensive driver. You're going to have to work to get around him, even if the car is not as fat, you know, is a little bit slower than the car behind him, which that's what these guys are taught their whole lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Defend the position.
Yep. I sort of wish we saw a little or continue to see more of that in the upper echelons of the field here. And I understand when you're in the points and healthily in the points, you're more worried about retaining that in running your own race. But, you know, let's just say when Verstappen's coming behind you and he's on a different pit cycle, so you're in the lead because you haven't boxed yet and he's trying to go around you, couldn't you at least make it just a little bit hard for him to do that? Just defend a little bit?
I would.
Yeah.
I don't buy into that strategy of, well, you haven't pitted yet, so you're going to have to pit, and there, ergo, he's going to take the lead. No, don't let him wait. At least make him wait until you go in the pits.
Yeah.
But then it's also, you know, every foot that you move, the inch that you move the car that you're not supposed to, and then it's tire deg, or, you know, tire deg, and, you know, it just sometimes it's a little bit too scientific, which I appreciate the series, but you would like to be able to have a guy who stayed out hold off for as long as he possibly can. A lot of times they can't, because then you're into, you know, you're not going to get the laps out of the tires that you need to and all that stuff. So,
yeah. But overall, I was actually pretty happy with this race. And I think when it happened, IndyCar was later. I don't know if you saw anything from that, but interestingly, sort of an F1 style snooze fest where Newgarden led like 90 something laps. So
yeah, I didn't.
But that I was actually, you know, F1 for me was more entertaining, which is a little bit rare sometimes. But Yeah. I like you said, I think if races continue to kind of play out this way, you know, there will definitely be some interest here this season for sure.
Looking forward to it. Let's just go real quick through the Australian GP briefly here. I'm having trouble with the old studio here. Mike's not in the right place. I'm off kilter.
Timing. Yes. Yeah.
So we've got two practice sessions tomorrow. Final practice and qualifying on Saturday. And then finally a Sunday GP. First GP was 1996. There was an Australian Grand Prix held at Adelaide, which must have been another course, in 1985, but only singularly in 1985. So, but almost 20 years in here at Australia, 5.278 kilometers. Lap record goes to Mr. Sergio Perez in 2023. So he set the lap record here last year. Minute 20.2 seconds. Hamilton has the most poles with 8. Schumacher has the most wins with 4. And here's a little trivia for you. Almost a third of the field retired. A third of the field retired on the first lap in 2002 when 8 cars pulled out following a dramatic multi-car collision triggered by Ralph Schumacher's Williams flying over the back of Rubens Barrichello's Ferrari. So nearly, what would a third of 20 be? 6?
Yeah, and back then it might have even, there might have been 22 on the grid or 24. Yeah,
so 7 cars gone.
Yeah.
They said 8 here, so. Yeah. Probability of a safety car, 67%.
Yeah, so I was seeing some stuff, and it reminded me of last year. Last year was a shit show. Red flags galore. Probably have to rewatch the highlights because I kind of had forgotten about it, but there were a number of collisions, and I think there was a lot of drama lap one even. So I would expect, if you're a first-time watcher, a little bit of chaos for this one. Yeah. For sure.
I could go back in my biblical archive here. I need to start dating these pages. But yeah. I think now that you mentioned it, I remember it being a little chaotic as well. Mm-hmm. So with a 67% probability of a safety car, then there's been incidents here in the past and we may see the same.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm pretty sure we will see something. Only like one real crash, I guess, so far, and it was self-inflicted by Stroll. So will be interesting maybe if we get a little wheel-to-wheel action there in Australia. But
I almost think there was a failure of some kind. I don't think it was his fault.
Oh, for Stroll?
And a Stroll crash?
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, you fucking moron. And then they figured out something broke or I don't know.
Yeah. It's
I always go to the dark side thinking it's the driver that screwed the car up, but a lot of times it's out of their control when something like that happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially when you're out there by yourself.
Yeah.
You know. So.
Yeah. A little unfortunate for him, but yeah, we'll see what happens in Australia.
I don't know. No love lost there. Not a big fan.
Yeah. And as a reminder for those on the east coast of the United States, which is pretty much all the listeners. This race happens at 1 a.m. Eastern Standard Time Sunday. So it's a Sunday race, but not really. And it's pretty much in the middle of the night. This is basically this and Japan are like the worst ones to watch for us, at least in terms of.
Yeah, the good thing is if you can roll out Sunday morning, and if you have the time, you can rewatch it first thing.
Yeah,
and then you don't have to sequester yourself for the rest of the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or my phone. The bad part is if you don't set your phone correctly, the F1 app doesn't care that it's 2 in the morning. So I've been busted for that a few times.
Yeah. And, you know, with our motorsports group chat that we have, sometimes there's, you know, something will happen and someone will say something, but I think we're usually decently responsible about not giving away a major plot points.
I think the etiquette there is before you make your comment, maybe say who's watching live.
Yeah. Yeah. I usually try to at least employ that tactic, but
right. Right. Well, it's easy when they're Saturday morning races, but now as we get into a different schedule, most people are going to be watching a delay somewhere.
Yeah, and I will be one of them. I'm not going to be watching at 1 a.m. this time around. So, yeah, should be exciting. Looking forward to it. All right. Well, I think that is going to do it for the F1 side of things. Are going to feature most of our soccer time to the what was maybe the best match of the season that we've covered so far in Man United versus Liverpool in the quarterfinals of the FA Cup in England. I do want to touch on a few things just as a little bit of housekeeping since we haven't recorded in a while. One of them being the Premier League title race. Give everyone a good update on that. It is still a 3-horse race that doesn't look to be cooling down anytime soon. So your top three, which is pretty much the teams that look like are going to be competing for this thing until the end, are Arsenal in first, Liverpool sit second, and Manchester City sit third. The top three teams, after 28 matches played, so there's 10 to go now, separated by one singular point, Arsenal on 64, Liverpool also on 64, and then you have Manchester City sitting on 63 points. So this is probably the best title race that I've seen since I've followed really closely, and that's been about a decade now. Following the Premier League, and to have a 3-horse race is actually quite rare so deep into the season. And really, you know, Liverpool and Man City played almost 2 weeks ago now, and it was a 1-1 draw, and there's not a whole lot to separate these teams, which I think is making it pretty interesting. It's an international break this weekend, so no club football. But as we come back, it's definitely we're going to be keeping a close eye on some Premier League matches. If we go north of the border into Scotland, checking in on that, Celtic sit in first on 71 points. They have actually played a game more than Rangers, who have only played 29 games as opposed to 30. Rangers still technically would have the sort of the upper hand. They sit just 1 point behind Celtic, but if they were to win their game in hand, obviously they would go top.
Is that because of the loss?
So
because of the loss differential?
No. So Rangers were supposed to play Dundee Sunday, and it got canned basically, inclement weather. So they have to make that game up in a few weeks, I believe. But
look at Kilmarnock in fourth.
I know. They've been a great story.
Hearts in third.
Yeah. Hearts in third, who have pretty, I mean, you can, I'm assuming you're looking at the table right now, you can tell Hart's pretty much far and away that best of the rest, 11 points separating them from Kilmarnock, but right. Kilmarnock are sort of the surprise package of this season, I would say. 44 points sitting in fourth. They played St. Mirren last weekend, who sit fifth, and I think they beat them 5-2. So something is firing pretty well for them over there. And as per usual in Scotland, that mid-pack is pretty tight. Not a whole lot to separate them there.
Yeah, Kilmarnock has only one less win than St. Mirren, but they have five more draws, and St. Mirren actually has more losses than Kilmarnock, 12-8. So
yeah,
that's interesting.
Yeah, St. Mirren are a tricky team to really gauge this season because they started out red hot. I mean, they were second, third for a while, and then they've really sort of tapered off since then and have just kind of slipped down. I would think they are going to settle in fifth. Hibernian don't really show much for me. Dundee United are going to be fighting, or Dundee, sorry, will be fighting for a top half position more than likely. And then the relegation battle, not really one at the moment. Livingston are 10 points adrift, and that's probably going to be that in terms of their fate. So the bottom of the table is pretty secure. With Celtic and Rangers, who knows? Let me look and see when they play again, because it is somewhat soon. April 7th, Rangers will host Celtic, and you have to imagine there will be some pretty large title implications there. Obviously, that's always a big occasion when they play, but haven't played each other in a while, so we'll see how that one stacks out. One more thing before we kind of get into the nuts and bolts of Man U versus Liverpool that I thought was worth mentioning. Celtic announced a North American tour, summer tour, for this summer. And one of the stops is in South Bend, Indiana, at the University of Notre Dame.
Yeah, right. So we're going to keep an eye on that and maybe make a sabbatical with the rest of the club from Cleveland to go watch that match.
Yeah, I think that's going to be pretty awesome. I think the tickets aren't like released yet. I'm assuming there'll be a word once they are, but yeah, I think the Cleveland CSC is planning on some sort of a bus trip out there. And I follow a lot of the clubs around. So there's like Columbus, Detroit, Pittsburgh. Seems like they're all trying to do something similar. So that would be great. We are able to make it there for sure.
Yeah, epic.
Yeah, but yeah, that's pretty much my catch up segment. And as I said, international break this weekend, so we have a lot of obviously international matches. United States are actually stinking it up against Jamaica right now, losing 1-0 in the CONCACAF Nations League. But a lot of friendlies and stuff, sort of boring, if I'm being completely honest. And I think that'll be a good place to shift gears into what was decidedly not boring, at least in my opinion. So the FA Cup, obviously not the same competition as the Premier League. This is the oldest trophy in English soccer. Originally, when they started playing, the only competition they played in was the FA Cup. And since it's sort of timely, the best way I can describe the FA Cup is like if you had March Madness in England, but made it way bigger. So like 700 clubs compete in it each season, and it whittles its way all the way down until we're here in the quarterfinal stage now. And obviously the winner and championship game is at the end of the season, but it's a really awesome tournament for sure.
And that, how long does that last? The entire year?
Basically, yeah. So they have like specific weekends for it. So it's not like you're not playing in the FA Cup every week, obviously.
Yeah.
But there's rounds. So preliminary rounds and then your first round. The big teams, like your Premier League teams, they don't actually get into the competition until the third round in like January. And then whatever the quarterfinal, I think it's technically like the sixth round, but that's where we're at now. And we were privileged to see two great rivals matched up against each other in Manchester United and Liverpool. And I don't know about you, but I'm thinking this is maybe the best game we've been able to cover so far this season.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. Right off the rip, and you know, 4 minutes in or so, we've got Rashford takes a pretty nice shot, no goal. The next attempt was pretty amazing. It was the longest feed I think I've seen since I started watching soccer to Salah.
Uh-huh.
And if he would have just had to write another 2 inches on his foot, it would have been the best goal probably I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah.
Because it was about a 50-yard feed in, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that was – I wrote down basically the same thing. I wish he scored that just from a aesthetic standpoint of soccer, because you said it. The one of the most just perfect balls that has ever been played into the box, coming into Mo Salah, who hits it first time and unfortunately goes just wide. But I said that would have been beautiful.
You would have seen that over and over and over again for the next year if he would have scored that.
Yeah, that's the stuff you see on like the YouTube compilations and stuff. But
right.
We didn't have to wait all but what, a minute later before Marcus Rashford, who is already showing a little bit of danger, is released on the left. And he kind of slips in Garnacho. And basically, Garnacho fires off a shot. It's saved, but then Scott McTominay is able to basically kind of pick up the scraps to make it 1-0. And
so a rebound off of off the keeper.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't able to secure the ball, and it popped right back out. And it was like a pinball. Boom, boom.
Yeah. Yep. And excellent crowd reactions throughout in this one. That was definitely one of them. Old Trafford, the home of Man United, rocking for this one, which is a little bit of a rarity these days. So I was happy to see that be the case. And it really just kind of, that goal perfectly summarized the nature of this first half, really. Sort of a great back and forth between two teams, and just very, for lack of a better word, watchable soccer, which I was more than happy with.
Yeah. I mean, it seemed like every few possessions there was something to pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
Rashford to McTominay again, around the 36th, that was almost a goal. And then a minute later, a VAR review for offside goal by Liverpool was confirmed. Mm-hmm. But that was also a meaty chance at a potential score. So I would rather watch that all day. I'll take the offside calls all day. Just get somebody in the box, You know, some of these games where it's just ticky tack, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. That's where I start losing my mind and watching Facebook Marketplace while I'm watching soccer.
Yeah, I totally get it. It's frustrating to say the least. When I think what you're basically saying is teams that will have the ball and just kind of do nothing with it. That's maybe one of the most infuriating things to watch in sports. And we did not have to subject ourselves to that one. This time around, we would go to the 44th minute for our next goal. Argentinian midfielder Alexis McAllister, one of the World Cup heroes, if you remember that tournament.
Yeah, it was great. It was a great shot too.
Yeah, I mean, a rocket.
Yeah,
rocket.
So 1-1 equalized, and I had it in overage, but maybe it wasn't quite overage yet.
For that goal, it's officially scored as the 44th minute.
Okay. All right. So. Many fours on one page here, so
yeah, a lot going on at the end of this half. And you know, Man United obviously took the lead at the beginning, and they had quite a few good shots and attempts on goal, but I did feel like throughout that Liverpool were probably the better team throughout and kind of deserved to be in the lead. So when that McAllister goal comes in, I, you know, a great shot, you're not really expecting it to go in, but felt it was deserved. And then this one, I was kind of dumbstruck because of this next one, just how nonchalant Mo Salah was. So he scores basically just a tap-in effort from Darwin Nunez. And it was just so strange because the defending was less than optimal. Almost like they had just sort of switched off. Yeah.
They thought the overage was over.
Yeah.
And it still had like a minute to go, it seemed like. So,
yeah, that's why I was so confused. And Mo Salah kind of showed, he was like, was that really what the best you had? Because he just kind of stood there and then was like, arms out. And very strange way to end the second half. Or the first half, but Liverpool.
So 2-1.
Yeah.
And Liverpool. There was a VAR check on that, but it was pretty clearly a good goal.
Mm-hmm.
Then we go into a little bit of a lull in the second half for about, I don't know, 40 minutes or so.
Yeah. Well, and I was thinking as I was watching. I was like, well, there's really no way that intensity continues for another 45 minutes. And for a long time into the second half, it was, I thought my intuition was correct there, because there were a few opportunities, but I think overall each team was sort of just not really sitting back, but I don't know. It's always hard to say what the game plan is, especially if you're Man United and you're at home and you're down 2-1, because if you open yourself up too much, obviously you're liable to concede a goal, but you still need to actually attempt some attacking conquest from time to time. And you didn't really get much of that until we get all the way into the 87th minute, and finally, Antony, who Man United have paid what should be a criminal amount of money for this guy, and he really hasn't done all that much, but Antony scores to level this one up in the 87th minute, in sort of the perfect time, really, to grab this goal right before the end of the match.
Right. And then, so this one being a cup game does not end in a draw. And you could smell extra time or overtime in this one.
Yeah.
We knew we were going there. The 105th minute, which what is that, 15 in? So just about halfway through the extra period, Elliott scores for Liverpool, then 3-2. And at that point, I was like, okay, 3-2, we're going to kick the ball around for the next 14 minutes or so, and so be it. I even fast-forwarded to my chagrin, and I had to back up. I honestly thought that this, you know, that Liverpool was going to be able to control the ball for the rest of that extra,
well,
overtime quarter, whatever you call it.
Yeah, and I actually, I can't even blame you there because, look, I've watched plenty of soccer.
Watch more than I have.
I've watched plenty of soccer, and here's what happens 95% of the time, it feels like, an extra time. Both teams do absolutely nothing. They do nothing for 30 minutes because nobody wants to lose. So you basically get two teams bunkering down and just passing it around, trying not to lose the ball. And then if they lose the ball, 11 men go behind and defend.
So that Elliott score in the 105th minute, I don't recall exactly what happened, if it was well played or if it was just a lucky strike or whatever.
I would go more in the camp that it was a bit lucky because it's from outside the box and actually takes a few deflections from United defenders.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Mm-hmm. So a little bit of luck required there to score that one. But again, I sort of got the feeling that, you know, Liverpool actually had deserved to be up at that point. But this game was not done with its twists, however.
Yeah, I don't have the time signature because, as I said, I chalked this up to being finished, but Rashford scores a goal for Man U and equalizes 3-3. Uh-huh. I'm not sure. You probably know what time that was. I don't.
That was the 112th minute, officially. And Rashford is just a guy I just love to watch play because he has this ability to just score these outrageous goals all the time, even when he's in a bit of a cold streak, which he has sort of been this season from time to time. But this is a guy that came into this United team at like 16 years old and burst onto the scene. And I think the pressure of playing for Manchester United cannot be overstated. And he's always taken his punches and you know, kept a good image and always been great to the fans. And I this is a guy I just love to see be successful. And I was really happy that he was able to score that equalizer to make it 3-3 at this point. And soccer, I mean, I know you know this by now, game of momentum, right? So you score an equalizing goal in the 112th minute and you're at home, okay, you're probably going to score the next goal.
Right, and you could feel that. At this point, you could kind of feel that that was going to be the case. And again, you'll have to give me the signature of time.
Yeah.
But basically, you know, this – at the onset of this match, I would not have, you could have bet me $1 million that the score would be 4-3 Man U, and it ended up 4-3 Man U. And it was a Jallo or J-Lo? I don't know.
Diallo, Ahmad Diallo.
Diallo.
Yeah, he scores in the 120th plus one minute there.
There was some extra time there in the bonus.
But
it was, like you said, it might be the best match we watch all year.
I struggle to see at least at the rest for the rest of the season a match that will top that in terms of twists and turns and lead changes and goals and just great soccer, to be honest.
By the way, he was red carded.
Yeah.
For taking his jersey off, which I guess they were fine with.
Yeah, so it's an automatic yellow if you remove your card or remove your shirt, and he must have already been on a yellow, so he just...
I think he was on a prior yellow.
Yeah, that's one of the laws of the game that unfortunately is has to be applied, even if it's sort of a buzzkill. But yeah, Amad Diallo, you deserve to take your shirt off, in my opinion, so... We'll go ahead and just wear that red card.
Does he sit then for the next
match? Yeah, so that is the one bad thing is they have to play a cup semifinal now. I believe they drew...
without him.
Yeah, they drew championship side Coventry City. But yeah, he's not going to be able to play in that one now. So sort of the unfortunate nature of the red card, but... Yeah, that was a particularly refreshing one to watch for me. And we head into the international break now, so we'll have to... I'm not sure if there's really anything worth sinking our teeth in at the moment, at least. Like I said, it looks like the United States are on the way to losing to Jamaica right now for... number of reasons, but yeah, we'll definitely look into that. Obviously Australia coming up on the F1 side of things, so we'll have plenty to discuss there, but I think that pretty much is the program for this week.
Yeah, that's a show, and you can go watch basketball now, which I will probably do the same for a little bit.
Yeah, it's March Madness, baby, so
yep.
Alrighty.
It is the most fun weekend of basketball. This weekend is, I don't know. I had it on sort of in the back. I didn't get to watch the entire Zips game, but mm-hmm. I was interested. I was always looking for that Mac upset.
Yeah.
There was a time when Kent State made it to either the Sweet 16 or the grade eight, I don't know. You'll have to look it up. But Kent made it pretty far in. Probably been a long time ago now.
Yeah. Always love a good Mac storybook run. Unfortunately, not to be today, but nonetheless.
Well, right. All right. Well, with that, I guess we'll get out of here.
Yes, indeed. Go ahead and spin the music. Oh, jeez.
Yes. So my esteemed co-host is turning 21 tomorrow. And hopefully you'll get a card in a day or two with the mail. Should be able to get from Akron to Columbus in one day, but possibly not.
It should be able to.
Anyhow, have a good time, and we look forward, your mom and I look forward to getting together with you soon. So that we can have our first legal beer together in an establishment of your choice.
I look forward to that for sure. And
all right. Tackling the Chicane, copyright 2024. We'll see you next time.